You are listening to RudolfSteinerAudio.com. If you are listening to the podcast of this, it is located at RudolfSteiner.podbean.com. Please consider becoming a patron. This is a reading of a collection of lectures by Rudolf Steiner entitled Initiation Science and the Development of the Human Mind, translated by Anna Moiss. It is in the Collected Works, Volume 228. This is the last lecture, Lecture 8 in this series, given in Stuttgart on the 16th of September, 1923. You will have seen from what was said yesterday that a particular state of conscious awareness, one which was still living experience to people in earlier times, has been lost in a way. I did say that the particular kind of waking consciousness we have today, living preferably in more or less abstract ideas, or at least in shadowy images, did not exist in the same form in the past. But instead there was a kind of waking dream state, dreamy waking state. One could not be sentient of it the way we are of a dream today. But it was like the epitome of living images, which corresponded to a more or less spiritual reality. A kind of sleep state existed then, which was dreamless, but left the kind of aftertaste I have described for you. Then there was also a third state of mind, the one which afterward was really felt to be like resting in the welling moon powers which enter into the earth and really do, in a way, raise human beings above earthly gravity, letting them be sentient of cosmic existence. The essential thing with the old states of mind was that people were also sentient of man's cosmic existence. Today, in our ordinary state of conscious awareness, only a shadowy afterglow remains, an afterglow of which only very few people are aware. It simply passes by the human mind without our being aware of it. Let me characterize this state of mind in most ancient times. When people consider their dreams today, they will find that all kinds of things they have lived through here on earth flow into these dreams, which in a way are chaotic. Long forgotten things come up, changed in many different ways. Even things that went unnoticed in life may come up in one's dreams. The times when these things happened are also mixed up in all kinds of ways. But when one goes into these dream experiences in more detail, one will discover something most peculiar. One will find that essentially everything that comes up as part of the dream is in some way, however tenuously, connected with events in the last 3 days. You may dream that something has come up again which you may have lived through 25 years ago. It is there, full of life, with perhaps some slight changes, but it is there. Yet, if you look at it a bit more closely, you will always discover something like the following. Someone comes into this dream which brings back an event that was 25 years ago. To be really abstract, let us say this person is called Edward. You will at least find that somewhere you heard the word Edward, even if only a whisper passing your ear, or have read it, quietly moving past your eye. Any event, however insignificant or remote, that comes up in a dream will be connected with something or other from the last 3 days. This is because human beings really bear experiences of 2, 3, or 4 days ago. Such times can only be approximate. In them, in a wholly different way from the way they do anything that happened earlier than that. Human beings initially take their perceptions up into their astral organism and their capital I organism. The events perceived will at first live a life that is directly connected with their conscious awareness. Anything experienced in the course of 3 days touches our feelings in a much more intense way than do events that lie more than 3 days back. As I said, in ordinary life, We do not pay attention to these things, but they are something real, after all. The reason is that anything by way of perceptions or thought processes taken into the human astral organism and into the eye organism has to be impressed into the ether body, or body of creative powers, and also, at least in some respect, into the physical body. The making of this impression takes 2, 3, 4 days, so that we have taken something we have experienced 2 or 3 times through the night before it has been impressed in the ether body and in the physical body. Only then may it be said to have become so fixed, at least in the ether body, that it can now be permanently remembered, thought for us. There really is a continuous inner interaction in human beings, a kind of struggle between the astral body and the ether body. And the outcome of the struggle is always that something which the individual had initially experienced as a spirit, endowed with conscious awareness, imprints, configures itself into the denser, more material elements of his essential nature. After 3 or 4 days, we then take something which before had been just a passing sensory experience with us, as an entry made, as it were, in our ether or creative power's body and in our physical body. Do consider, as I give this description, how little of this people are actually aware of at the present time. Let me read that again. Do consider, as I give this description, how little of this people are actually aware of at the present time. Yet it is something that goes on all the time in the life of the human mind and also of the body. Every experience we perceive must essentially wait for 3 or 4 days before it is wholly ours. It swings to and fro between astral body and ether body, and in a way does not really know if it will indeed be imprinted in the ether body, and with this also in the physical body. For something happens there that is really extraordinarily important. Just consider that only the I and the astral body are our true self. We cannot say that the ether body is ours. People of this materialistic age are presumptive enough to declare their ether body, and above all their physical body, to be their body. But those bodies actually belong wholly to the cosmos. When something we experience in the I and astral body is handed over to the ether body and physical body in 3 or 4 days' time, it is no longer ours alone, but belongs to the cosmos. It is really only for 3 days that we can say that something we have dealt with in the world has significance only for us. In 3 or 4 days' time, we have inscribed it in the universe. It rests in the universe, belonging not only to us, but also to the gods. In very early times of human evolution, the state of conscious awareness that was deeper than sleep, and has now been lost, gave people distinct sentience of this strange fact. And the initiates were able to say what was really behind this strange sentience. Above all, in the period of which I spoke yesterday, that of Egypto-Chaldean civilization, it was merely a dim feeling that people had. But the initiates of the mysteries were initiated into the actual nature of it, and this happened because at that time, today initiation has to be an entirely inward process in soul and spirit, at most involving also bodily symbols and body image processes, initiation was essentially an external process, with the external changes then also changing the inner aspects. In many cases, initiation was such, I am giving one example but could also give others, that the initiant was for about 3 days taken by his initiators into a state that has really been lost today. He was in that state for 3 days, to live through the things that a human being goes through in the world outside the human being for those 3 days, and how this passed over, as it were, into the actual nature of the human being. The initiated individual arrived at the view as to what an idea, sentience, a feeling for facts goes through before a person can make it his own. But what came up there was in a state that was so much hidden within this wisdom and does contain elements of extraordinary significance, so significant that modern materialists have not the least idea of it. It is the following. It will be easiest for me to help you to understand what was achieved with this initiation, where the initiand was kept in a state of dim consciousness for 3 days, if I first remind you of the life in dreams that everyone still knows today. Yes, the life in dreams is something that needs to be studied in detail. We must, of course, avoid all the superstition. And this must be understood if one goes deeply into dream life, taking a pure view, the view where one is seeking to gain genuine knowledge. But it is something which has extraordinary depth. How does this dream life actually show itself? Well, we know many different kinds of dreams, but let us concentrate on the kind of dream that is a reminiscence of past events. The images of those events come up in these dreams. How do they present? Well, you know that they have been transformed to a great and extraordinarily great degree. It can certainly be the case that someone who perhaps has not the least prospect of ever doing such a thing in his real life dreams that as a tailor he has to make a ceremonial coat for a high-ranking minister. He may not have the least prospect of doing so, but he is always making and has always made coats, perhaps even coats he was pleased with. Well, all kinds of things may play into such a dream. Perhaps the individual concerned was the servant of a Roman senator in a previous life on earth and had to dress the senator in his toga. Dim powers of sentience remain, and something he is going through in this life is tinged with something that shines across from earlier lives on earth. I have referred to only one of the causes for dreams changing in content. But still, they do change greatly, which is something we all know. And one really has to ask oneself, quote, what do these dreams contain? What is active in them? Close quote. It is, after all, external events which trigger such dreams, but these external events have been completely transformed in the dream. Why is that so? You see, it comes from something which the natural scientific view would never let us dream of the least little bit today. This is because the laws accepted in natural science today are looked for everywhere in the outside world by observation and experimentation. These natural laws to which I am referring come to a halt as soon as they reach the human skin. If someone believes that the natural laws he establishes in his laboratory also act within boundaries set by the human skin, he is definitely on the wrong track. It is not only that the substances taken into his organism are changed within it. The actual movement of the organic laws to which the human being is subject live in the dream. The dream is closer to us than the abstract thinking we do during the day. The dream contains the manner in which the external substances behave inside the human being, taking the form of laws. And how does the dream present? As a protest against the reality framed as the laws of nature. From going to sleep until you wake up, you live in the world of which scientists say that everything in the world goes according to these laws. The moment when you pierce through your dream into the spiritual world, just the tiniest bit, a small spider's web, I'd say, your dream experience shows itself to be a protest against the laws of nature. The dream cannot proceed the way events proceeded in the outside world. Otherwise, you would be very close to waking up. The dream that arises from actual sleep is a protest, the way it hangs together against the laws of nature, for it comes closer to the human being. Present-day materialistically minded people make interesting discoveries in this respect. An interesting book published years ago can really only be said to be truly characteristic of the mental constitution, particularly of modern people who think in a scientific way. In his title Die Magie als experimentelle Naturwissenschaft, Magic as Experimental Natural Science, by a man called Staudenmayer, some of you will know the book. The man also wanted to find out if there really is anything to the spiritual world. As to anthroposophy, he confessed that he had only read the writings of its opponents. People are hesitant to set about it because they find it difficult to get a grip on anthroposophy. It is particularly if they are part of the scientific structure of today that they do not easily find their way into anthroposophy. He started by making experiments to find out about the world of the spirits, rather like spiritualism. He reduced his conscious awareness, made himself fuddled, until he entered into a medium-like state. He then did automatic writing. But he was surprised to find that it was a lot of nonsense, and none of it agreed with what he otherwise knew to be real. It would not fit. Above all, it was odd that the automatic writing said the spirits spoke to him, for he knew very well that it was not possible for spirits to speak to him. Moreover, those non-spirits told the most terrible lies. Indeed, he grew quite, I don't want to speak badly of him, well, medial, completely losing his way in the whole business. A friend suggested that he let it be and live a sensible life, go hunting, for instance. So he went hunting for magpies. Lo and behold, the things he had stirred up in himself continued even into his hunting. He could not get rid of them. When he looked up into a tree, he would see not a magpie, but a frightful dragon with terrible claws, which looked at him with fearsome eyes, absolutely horrible. And such stuff was everywhere. He then lived in a continuous inner battle, seeking to find his way back to being a normal human being. I am telling you this because this is experimental evidence that everywhere, the moment one is not merely in a waking dream, but using machinations that take one to the situation where the inner human being also has its say, you do immediately get the protest against the external natural order, which is, of course, felt to be a lie. If you are used to seeing someone, who is your friend, always as a reasonably decent individual, and then, when you are in this state, you find that he is all the time sticking out his tongue at you, thumbing his nose at you and grinning at you, you'll say, quote, "The spiritual world is telling lies," close quote. What is really acting like the dream in such a case? Now, the correct element in this is that in every case where a human being comes to the spiritual world, of which he is part, with everything that is inside his skin, he enters into an existence that will protest against the natural order. No wonder that all kinds of elemental spirits turn up in all those falsehoods when the case is undeveloped and one cannot judge the situation. But you always get protest against the natural order when you come to the spiritual, as even ordinary dreams do show. People should really say to themselves, quote, "I am entering into a very different order there, and though it only comes in the fleeting form of a dream, it does come as a protest against the best of natural laws which one can outwardly establish in laboratory and experiment," close quote. But you see, this is the first step toward the spiritual world. At this first stage, one meets the protest against the laws of nature. The laws of nature lose their majesty, I would say, as soon as one enters into the inner nature of man. Going through those 3 days, the old initiates came to understand that there is not just a natural order, but within and behind it there is a spiritual order. Someone who gets acquainted with initiation in this way can enter into these things even today, using present-day means, can go through the experiences of the 3 days, when coming to experience for the first time what is really a dreadful torment for the soul. For there the human being is indeed entering into a world where all natural laws collapse, where dreams are ever-changing, where situations keep changing, even where reminiscences of ordinary life are concerned, for the laws of nature do no longer apply. If the laws of nature are everything to you, you will, to begin with, face nothingness, the void. It is particularly painful, deeply painful and tragic for modern human beings to go through this initiation and be sentient of entering a region of existence where this protest against the laws of nature is uttered. One feels that everything one has had before in the intellect, which was, of course, based on the laws of nature, this intellectualistic soul quality is drowning. One's soul can no longer breathe, because one has got too much used to the natural order. Finally, one sees that a different world is coming in from a completely different side of the world. This lives not in a natural but in a spiritual order. And from the depths of human conscience, one is sentient of a moral world order which is present throughout, in and welling through that natural world order. One learns to say to oneself, quote, "Here is the natural order, my senses perceive it, and natural science establishes its laws. When I leave this natural order, I enter into a world that protests against it. As I become aware of this protest against the natural order, the moral world order pours in all around like a new light-filled water of life, so that one may breathe again. This moral world order ultimately opens out and becomes spiritual world order." Close quote. That was the great insight that the initiates of earlier times had. They saw the real moral world order project into the physically real world order. In between, they experienced the protest against the physical world order. A faint last glimmer of this is experienced in the 3-day event of which I spoke. Anything we live through in the outside world, be it our sensations, be it our actions, needs 3 or 4 days to be imprinted in our organism. But when it has been imprinted, it is not in the form in which we experienced it outwardly. It is imprinted as an impulse that calls for a moral development, which is entirely different in its laws from the natural order. If someone were to see what has become of his experiences within him after those 3 days, he would say to himself, quote, "Something I lived through in a natural way, in earthly existence, has become imprinted in the eternal core of my being. It is no less real than it was in the outside world, but now lives in me as the impulse of a moral world order, following which I now go further out on the ocean of life." Close quote. In this way, we bear within us the moral causes of our later life, and these have evolved from the events we experienced in the natural world. However, in the last periods of human evolution, the situation was that, as the human being entered into that sub-sleep, as I call it, into the state of being embraced by the earth, he was entering into the external ether. There the things he'd experienced were balanced out with the external ether. Morally, human beings were placed into the moral world order not only with regard to their inner orientation, but they were placed in the morality of the cosmos in that sub-sleep being embraced by the earth. This was lost to humanity. When this deep sleep was eliminated from human states of conscious awareness. So that only that faint echo remained in the three-day experience which I described for you. Humanity would have been gradually cast out from the self-understood moral world order, as it were, if there had not been another event in the course of Earth evolution. It was an event in world history when the Christ Spirit went through the process that individual initiates had gone through in earlier times, so that they might tell people what had been experienced in the 3 days. The Christ Spirit, having descended from spiritual worlds into the body of Jesus of Nazareth, and as a God living an actual human life, went through this in a unique event on earth. He went through the process that had been gone through in those 3 days, doing so for the whole of humanity. The knowledge that before could be gained through the very deep sleep, coming to man not consciously, but at least subconsciously, something human beings had gone through in a wholly nature-related way, had to be gone through so that human beings might be able to connect with the deed that the Christ did for earthly humanity in the mystery on Golgotha. That was the deed God did on our behalf. Man had taken a sudden step in the evolution of the conscious mind, and because of this, he had to live in a moral way, and with regard to Christ Jesus, through something that he had earlier experienced by nature. The coming of the mystery on Golgotha thus relates to the whole meaning of Earth evolution, because it did so with the meaning of the evolution of the human mind. We can only understand what was really meant to happen with the mystery on Golgotha if we look back on something that had once happened naturally and now has to happen in a moral sense. However, the modern mind, moving between waking, sleeping, and dreaming, has not yet gained its inner harmony in this particular respect. For what has been going through this modern mind since it developed its own form more and more, so as time went on, especially from the 15th century onward, a one-sided way of looking at the natural order. Yes, that is what people believe in, and they also think they understand this natural order. They call everything within this natural order real existence. But they do not want to go any further. They do not want to penetrate to that power of human insight which leads to the spiritual. Because of this, it came to be accepted in more recent times to speak of the moral world order as of something which now does also come in from somewhere or other. People forget honesty, however. For when you actually look at the natural order, the way people got used to doing more and more, one could not really say that it had any reality. All one could do, I'd say, was to help oneself through the situation in a somewhat dishonest way by saying, quote, on the one hand there is knowledge, and on the other hand there is belief. Knowledge cannot be belief, and belief cannot be knowledge, and the moral world order relates to belief, close quote. That is a convenient formula, which has been commonly accepted by many in recent times. This distinction between belief and knowledge is actually considered to be truly Christian. It was not all that long ago, relatively speaking, 5 or 6 centuries ago, that the distinction certainly was not made in this way, quite definitely not by the early Christians. Today it still is not Catholic dogma, but Catholic usage, to distinguish between belief and knowledge in this way. People just do not know how to relate to natural order and moral and spiritual order, because they do not know the transition. They do not understand even how a dream takes one out of the natural order in a protest against it, a dream which in a sense is the great preparer. When we have gone through this preparation, we may come upon the principle which is moral world order because it is spiritual moral world order. A satisfying view on these things can really only be gained if we take an unbiased look into the human past and into something that does not yet exist in the present. Otherwise, even the historical documents from the most ancient times will basically continue to be something you stare at, but certainly do not understand. You see, this morning people talked in many ways about the people who oppose anthroposophy. There are things we can say in favor of these opponents, but not for the good. With the things the opponents are saying about anthroposophy, one, well, at least I, must sometimes recall an anecdote, which is said to be based on the truth. Kuno Fischer, the well-known professor, liked to tell it on many occasions. He said that he had two colleagues at school who lived together, may have been brothers. They had an uncle who was an out-and-out simpleton. The time came when they were learning about logarithms and mathematics and needed to buy logarithm tables. The uncle took a look at these tables. He saw nothing but figures on them, and so he asked these schoolboys, his nephews, what kind of figures these were. They had no idea how to introduce him to logarithms. Finally, one of the two young rogues had an idea. Quote, "Yes, those are all the house numbers in Europe," close quote. The uncle believed him and decided that this was really quite useful, to know all the house numbers in London, Paris, and so on, instantly. You see, just as this uncle regarded the logarithm tables, so do people look at these ancient documents without any inner vision as to what they tell. The scholars who are currently publishing them ultimately also have nothing else to say about them. But what the uncle did about the logarithms, thinking them to be house numbers throughout Europe. One really has to know how far the way of seeing this, which is possible with abstract thought, is removed from the spiritual reality. This is something one must be really clear about in one's mind. One must have the courage for this. Otherwise, one will fail to understand how present-day humanity has developed from a past that was very different. We are really living in an age now where the present way of living through sleep, waking, and dreaming leads to inner conflict in many different ways for anyone who is able to practice self-observation and above all self-determination. Just as that deep sleep crumbled away from humanity, a sleep that had held so much significance for people in past ages, when the initiate had to explain the nature of what human beings went through in that deep sleep, so does present-day sleep now crumble away. It is not that people would in future dream all night, but they are really going through this stage in such a way that their dreams get duller. In early times, they were waking dreams, and these have become our way of having abstract ideas. In the same way, the chaotic dreams of today will grow dim and dull, and people will have this dull dream sleep. They will not have conscious awareness of the dream. Above this will be the present-day waking stage with abstract thinking called logical. Then, however, there will be a hyper-awareness, and this already comes for those who understand these things. This hyper-awareness concerns itself above all with the human will, and with the effect that the will can have as it moves upon the nervous system. If you observe the untrammeled way in which the human will unfolds, doing so in the widest horizons, and understand it using initiation science, you will see how a heralding of hyper-awareness, a higher form of conscious awareness than the usual waking state of mind, is entering into what souls bring to expression, even going as far as states of physical sickness. However, people do not yet want to live with this, for they can only experience it if they make spiritual science their own. This spiritual science where one has to think in a very different way from that used in the everyday world. A spiritual science which truly is much more practical than the theoretical life practice of today, which is really the most profound non-practice. This spiritual science actually adds a thinking that is inwardly alive to the ordinary abstract way of thinking. This is not something we can add at will and leave aside at will. It is something which results, arises, for a particular organization appears in humanity which did not exist in earlier times. At present we have the first beginnings of it, the blood circulation in man's organs of movement, arms, legs, hands, feet, is progressively changing. Man is changing. The condition we often refer to as nervousness today reflects the fact that some kind of higher state wants to enter into man, but man is not yet accepting it. This makes people restless because it is still alien to them. They will only come to rest when they have made it their own. We can thus see a further three states of mind that lie ahead for humanity, with the human race working its way toward them: a dull dream sleep, a waking state, and being hyper-awake. The reason why so much is shaking and rattling humanity in external life situations is that humanity is resisting, mostly unconsciously, the change that wants to come from spiritual worlds. It will come, however. It wants to come. Above all, it does want to get to the human will. Human beings will have to understand in a very different way than they are prepared to do today that when it comes to the spirit, the region has to be passed where protest arises against the laws of nature. Human beings will only come to understand the future going via the mystery on Golgotha if they will be able to rise to the insight that the subject of the mystery on Golgotha cannot be grasped through natural science, but can be grasped with the power one develops by properly understanding the stage of mere dreaming, which tells of the natural process, and progressing to understanding the other shore of existence. The elements of understanding which are right for future understanding of the mystery on Golgotha must be gathered from the spiritual shore of existence. It will be essential to position the things which human beings can experience in the present time between the past and the future, and that human beings come to feel themselves to be a transition from this past into the future. They will then also be able to gain more and more understanding for the way of working with spiritual as well as natural truths. It is easy to understand the error people fall into, for things which are wrong can be so tremendously logical. People fail to consider that things which are wrong can be so tremendously logical. Surely nothing can be more logical than to observe approximately how long some sedimentary rock needs to reach a particular thickness. The most natural way must surely be to calculate that if some geological stratum has such and such a depth, we multiply the small depths with the figure of how many times it fits into the great depth. You will get so and so many years. A geological period was 20 million years, 200 million years, Silurian, Devonian, or any other. Ah, the calculation is brilliantly correct. Nothing to be said against it. Yet, what we think is logical does actually deceive us in this case. This kind of logic always reminds me of the logic which one of the greatest mathematicians of all times once applied to his own life. When he had reached a considerable age, he suddenly developed a lung disease. He knew many medical people, and through these connections arrived at an idea of how many small abscesses he would have to cough up to get rid of his lung disease. It was a matter of how the lung continues to develop. He arrived at a figure of 15 years. So, all would be well in 15 years' time. Only he died 2 years later. That, you see, is reality. The other thing was logic. That is also how reality declares to logic, in the whole of the cosmic universe. Excuse me, read that again. That is also how reality relates to logic in the whole of the cosmic universe. It is incredibly easy to prove things, for logic must not be attacked but defended. It has to be expressly said to be correct. It is just as correct as when someone works out, quote, my heart goes through a particular process of development. At a certain time it will have reached a particular state. I calculate how long it may take until it reaches this stage, 300 years. I then go back 300 years, working out what my heart was like 300 years ago. Close quote. The problem is that, as a physical human being, I did not live with this physical heart 300 years ago, nor will I be alive in 300 years' time. The earth also did not exist at the times calculated by geologists. For it needs the spiritual order to perceive what the earth has gone through in the past. That is what is so beguiling about modern science, that things which are illusionary can be so easily proved, but that the proofs tell us nothing about the truth. Today human beings are therefore living in fear, not consciously so, for they do not wish it, but subconsciously. Fear that the truth must really be lost to them. We see this fear shimmer out from many things people say today. Essentially, those who develop philosophies of life on the basis of materialism do not feel very comfortable with them. They feel some anxiety everywhere about boundaries which they do not want to cross. Though, on the other hand, these boundaries present terrible obstacles to living a fully human life. People do have a feeling that if they accept only the natural order, they cannot really live with this, and that above all such natural order as we take up into our life of ideas cannot lead to artistic and religious sentience and ideas that have genuine inwardness. We must not forget that the religious system we have today comes from times when human beings fathomed the cosmic world out of that deep sleep. All our religious institutions are from those ancient times. The religious institutions, not the mystery on Golgotha. That does not depend on any kind of religious view. It is a fact that has taken its place in earth evolution. This must be grasped also in the states of mind, which are now only in preparation. The religion creative faculty of humanity has been unfruitful for many centuries, and indeed millennia. Genuine artistic powers have remained unfruitful. Apart from just a few renaissances, we are not really living in originally elementary creativeness. Yet this wants to come into our time, and the human discomfort, which is the most marked phenomenon in our civilization, represents the birth pangs, as it were, of a new era on a scientific, a new era on an artistic, a new era on a social, religious, moral basis, the future of humanity. This must above all be close to our hearts, for humanity must live toward that future. At no other time was the human ear less inclined to hear initiation science. In a way, we may also say that at no other time did humanity have greater need of this than today. This is the reason why, specifically for this conference, I wanted to speak about the past, present, and future of man, considering the development of the human mind. With only 3 lectures, it had to be rather sketchy, but individuals can develop the things I have said further for themselves. It seems to me that the conscious mind, being closest to individual human nature, is also the one thing that will most easily bear fruit for the individual, stimulating him so that he will enter more and more into spiritual experience as such. The people of our time need this kind of spiritual life, not materialistic life, so that they may be the human beings of the future. Because human beings have come to think and form ideas in an abstract, powerless way. I would say all inner ways of life they have developed have become such, for the time being, that with present-day education it really is the case that to speak to them of things of the spirit has the same effect as speaking of logarithm tables to the simple-minded uncle. What mighty signs do, after all, come up here or there for the desire of the spiritual world to come in, people misinterpret this, as if they were the house numbers of Europe. A slightly far-fetched comparison, but understandable in view of what I've been saying. The general lifestyle, or rather way of judging life, also enters into the most scientific thinking, and there turns into not just bourgeois, but the lowest form of humanity, lacking in all imagination to the nth degree, moral hypocrisy dressed up and embroidered scientifically. If ever something wants to emerge, even just a trace of it, people consider it to be something which from the materialistic point of view and good common sense can only be said to be crazy. In this case, too, there is a nice story based on reality. In the early 1840s, the philosopher Schelling, grown old by then, was called from Munich to Berlin. He had been silent for a long time. A man with a great reputation, he was to present positive philosophy in contrast to negative philosophy, a term he was himself using. His intention was to evolve the development, at least of the spiritual life of humanity, the development of the mysteries and of religion, going infinitely deeper at that time at Berlin University than anyone has done even to this day. When Schelling gave his first lecture in Berlin, the most illuminated minds were sitting in the front row, certainly no students, but the professors from all faculties, leading educators, the most illustrious representatives of academic life. The students sat at the very back, and the audience was actually waiting, insofar as one could honestly wait there, for the fulfillment to be brought by this man of renown. Yet faces grew longer and longer as Schelling gave his first lecture. He did speak of the spirit in a special way. He spoke of the spirit at a time when the age of materialism was coming to its peak, was just about to be in full flower. He spoke of the spirit. Faces grew longer and longer, and people did not know what he was aiming at. They simply did not know this. The philosopher Trendelenburg, later to be famous, was sitting in those front rows. He said that he thought he had understood a very little of this philosophy, but not the rest. But he was not sure if he had really understood this very little. Now, you see, one day one of the people who had heard the lecture met someone else who had also been present. People, including these two, had been cudgeling their brains for days, saying, quote, "Why was Schelling called to Berlin, seeing that no one can understand the things he says?" Close quote. Well, the friend was able to tell the other, for he was able to inform him, that Schelling's daughter had got engaged to the son of the Minister of Education. So now it was possible to understand why Schelling wanted to go to Berlin. Now the matter made sense. Yes, it does indeed seem paradoxical when one is telling such things. But one has to put it like this. For anything that can be grasped with a way of thinking which is characteristic of our time is that far removed, for the time being, from something which as spiritual science truly does not point to the future in an arbitrary way, but because it is an inner human need, because the human race must fall into decadence unless it gains a new spirituality. This new spirituality alone will be able to experience the three full states of mind which have to be gained in future: subdued dream sleep, the ordinary waking state, and the hyper-awake state. Otherwise, human beings will not be able to experience their humanity in future times on earth. For the Godhead wants to develop this future threefold human being from the present threefold human being just as it developed the present threefold human being, dreaming, sleeping, waking, from the old human being, who dreamed in images, slept with an aftertaste on waking, and knew deep sleep. Today, man has arrived in the age of freedom, as I have often explained it for anthroposophists. He has to decide to use his own free powers of insight to live toward that which the Godhead of the world has determined for him. Then it will be possible not only to think in the present day, but above all have the right sentience concerning the past, present, and future of man. It will then also be possible to have the will for life on earth to be in accord with what the divine and spiritual world order truly should be from the past, through the present, and into the future. This is what I wanted to say. With these words, I wish to end my talk, and only wish in conclusion that tomorrow we shall start such a discussion here, that within the Anthroposophical Society it will be evident that there is now a real will to shape this society in such a way that there will be a real, lively awareness in this society of what the full human being is meant to be. A full human being who must see himself properly as the human being of the past, the human being of the present, the human being of the future. For these three are also one. And that which man has been in the past, is in the present, and shall be in future, will one day, I would like to say, encompass the whole anthropos before the divine world order. But it will need to be striven for, in that an anthroposophy which is taken up enthusiastically with all one's heart guides us to the true, genuine anthropos, the whole, total human being. That is the end of Lecture 8 and the end of Collected Works, Volume 228, translated by Anna Moyse, entitled Initiation Science and the Development of the Human Mind.